in looking at all of the financial aspects of things that you can learn, that can feel overwhelming if you just look at the total process. But realizing that it's a longitudinal experience. It is something that is going to, you know, be small steps along the way.
Good day. Welcome to Ripple's Physicians Wellbeing, a space to discuss coping with stressors while training in the field of medicine and tips for overall wellness.
Learn more about the Wellness Home Services at gmuwellness.utesca.edu. And don't forget to subscribe to stay updated with new episodes wherever you enjoy podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you. Last month's episode, we explored physical domains as we are addressing well-being and of all the 8 domains that are interdependent. As always, we do this with the hopes we can offer important, relevant, and practical information to take care of your wellness. This month, I'm excited to say we have a very special guest.
Yes, thank you, Vina. We're joined today by Dr. Victor Smith, a pediatrician and neonatal fellow. You're in your what year of neonatal fellowship,
Victor? I'm in my third year now.
Third year, absolutely. And I know Victor as well because he was one of our earliest members of our longitudinal compassion course, cohort 2, that finished last year. So I know Victor very well, and it's a delight to have you.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. You know, so during this episode, we're going to explore the financial domain, which in some senses is incredibly important, and certainly one that we know affects resident and fellow well-being. But before that, talk to us a little bit about your interest in well-being, physician well-being in general, and about your interactions with the GME Wellness Program.
Sure. So first and foremost, just to kind of say that I think general well-being is kind of an initial just foundation just to have for ongoing wellness throughout your life. And so I think a big part of that is just, you know, initially saying, how can you, you know, feel well not only in your workplace, but then also just your personal life as well.
So important.
As that kind of keeps going through it, I think that making sure a lot of the financial and even personal well-being things that you guys have provided through the GME Wellness Department has been incredible. For one, I would just like to be able just to highlight our counseling program.
Yes.
The fact that we have our counseling program that is just so consistent with having counselors really available at all different kinds of times. So not only during, you know, days and night times, evenings, you know, having it available in person as well as then online, just really that flexibility, but really having the option then of being able to have dedicated time where you can go talk about what's going on with your life, even if that is, you know, having a great week or having a more challenging week, as we all do within medicine.
Yes.
And so I really think that being able to have that resource available is just incredible. I
completely agree. And we're really blessed to have two of the finest psychologists, counselors in the nation. So thank you for that, Victor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. It's very validating, and we are so glad to support you.
Mm-hmm. And additionally, the compassion course, kind of as we've you know, gone through that, has been a wonderful resource as well. Just I think that trying then to better be able to focus on some of those skills and ability, again, not only in a, you know, personal but also professional sense, to work on some of those aspects for self-compassion, I think are really, really important to just initially kind of start, again, with that that base foundation to better be able to go out and practice compassionately in the workplace as well.
Great. I appreciate you saying that, Victor. And in fact, we recently had an opportunity to present the research on that course at the ACGME meeting in February, and it was very well received.
Oh, so, wonderful.
So something we'll be continuing to do and report back.
So, Victor, we would love to hear your thoughts on domains of well-being. And you always come up with your own explanation of how one can really be in harmony with their domains, and also how do you address financial domain?
Certainly. So I think that by being able to look at all the different domains and the, you know, domain pulse check really allows, it helps for me to better realize that I'm touching on all the different important aspects of my life. Yes. I really end up thinking that a lot of the ability to to kind of look at each different aspect of my domains, mm-hmm. help me kind of mm-hmm. keep well-balanced and well-rounded in that same respect. Mm-hmm. Often it ends up being that whatever is kind of the most pressing or kind of the acute issue that's going on in my life ends up feeling like the thing that I need to go and put more time into.
Yes.
But often it's actually the opposite. It's often then that, you know, the other aspects for different domains are really how to help me feel better balanced and also then have the best clarity to actually kind of maintain my life in a good and proper way. Mm-hmm. So I really think by trying to be able to look at all the different domains, then I'm better able to look at how I can take a big picture of kind of keeping in check.
Yeah, and more like a holistic well-being, mm-hmm. right? So, and can you tell us about financial domain?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I think that one of the interesting parts about the financial domain is that whether we want to or not, it's going to be a present part of our life. That is something that is just something that we all have to wrestle with, is that that we have to be able to support ourselves financially, and that in that same way, if it's something that we don't address or we ignore, that even if we don't like that, then it still is something that is going to rear up or cause issues in terms of kind of trying to be able to address our life. And so
I'm even going to add that sometimes the decisions that you make early in your career mm-hmm. are extremely important yeah. for you longer term.
Oh, absolutely. And then just to add, I know this one, you have really developed a keen interest, mm-hmm. although, you know, I would say you're a fellow in neonatology, but not a certified financial planner, but you have developed enough knowledge to share some of your wisdom with us so we can share with other incoming residents and fellows. And mm-hmm. yeah, thank you.
Certainly. Yeah. And just to add to that point, I would just say that it is always a constant work in progress. It is not yes. anything that I feel like I've learned a lot, and I still have very much more still to learn.
Sure.
And with that in mind, it is it's never too late to start trying to kind of pick up that information and even small steps in terms of trying to better understand what's going on in terms of your own financial well-being mm-hmm. really can make that's the points that'll really make the biggest impact is right. kind of some of those initial yes. first steps kind of can make the biggest impact. And so just getting started, I think, is a huge part of it.
So, as you know, we just finished match week, and so we matched a new crop of interns that'll be starting on mm-hmm. July 1st. And my question to you is, what should we tell them about the financial aspects of mm-hmm. what they're getting ready to be involved in? In other words, what are the things you wish you knew then that you know now that would help support their financial literacy and ultimately financial well-being?
Great. Thank you. That's a very good question. As I think initially the kind of first part for what they should think about as they kind of come back into this, you know, initial medical training is the same thing that's going on with their medical training for a financial well-being can also kind of be similar. In the idea that as they come into their medical training, they're there to learn. They're there to try to gain growth in terms of their ability to practice medicine. Mm-hmm. And that takes time and that takes effort. And some of that happens just through practice.
Sure.
And I think similarly within the financial realm, often in looking at all of the financial aspects of things that you can learn, that can feel overwhelming mm-hmm. if you just look at the total process. But realizing that it's a longitudinal experience. It is something that mm-hmm. Is going to, you know, be small steps along the way, that it is first kind of really starting out with realizing where you're at. So taking a little bit of kind of some self-reflection and mm-hmm. saying, where are my finances currently at? And, you know, where is my money going? I think is just a first great initial step.
And how much is my debt coming yeah. out of medical mm-hmm. school, which can be staggering at times now.
You want to look at your numbers, not hide it away.
Yeah, certainly. And then creating a plan, and the best way I think really to go about creating that plan is to look at what your goals are. And so I think first starting out and saying, what are your future goals? What do I want my, you know, future debt to look like? What do I want my future financial wellness to look like? What are, you know, the things that I want to be able to spend money on? What are the things that I want to be able to save for? And starting out with those big picture goals and then distilling those down into small manageable goals, those things of saying, I want to save X amount of money by X time, or I want to be able to have my, you know, loans paid off by, you know, this many years out of residency, are great initial kind of goals to then say, all right, if I've got, you know, I want to be done with my debt by 5 years out of residency, then that gives you a number to say, all right, how can I reach that goal?
Yes.
And kind of those initial measurable aspects can really be helpful.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things that we found for some residents who are just starting is they see their total salary divided by 12 and expect that that's going to be what they're going to see in their paycheck during that first month. And needless to say, are quite surprised when it's lower. Because taxes have been held out, because healthcare issues have been held, you know, in some places maybe their parking or other things have been held out. And so it's oftentimes much smaller, but they may have budgeted for the larger number, perhaps gotten a more expensive apartment or a home payment than they were expecting, and all of a sudden they have not a lot left over for food, for utilities, for gasoline, and certainly for vacations and things like that.
Sure, yeah. That brings me to another question. So this is what are some healthy ways of dealing with money? Like we were just talking about budget, of course. And do you have any resources?
So I think that some of the different aspects for talking about how to deal with money in a healthy way is trying to initially start out with again, what your goals are, and by then trying to start out with what your goals are is realizing what is enough for you, or what sort of things that you can best use money towards. So I think it's important to realize, especially kind of as in terms of long-term thoughts about money, that money is a tool to be used. It is not something that is necessarily is going to bring inherent joy in what it is. It is something that allows you to reach other goals that you have.
That's a great point.
That is a great point. Yes, very powerful too.
And so I think that then trying to realize that then, you know, money can be used in those ways to help reach those goals, but it is not necessarily just accumulating for the sake of accumulating. Try to choose the things that you're passionate about, that the things that you want to be able to add to your life and better be able to support your lifelong, you know, goals, and then use money towards those. But on the things that you have no interest in, or it's not important to you, it's not passion for you, then don't spend money in those areas. As best as you can, try to allocate resources the same way you do with your time to things that you're passionate about. Money can work similarly.
And increasingly, more and more practicing physicians are making that calculation of, I'm willing to accept perhaps less money for more free time with my family or with the things that I love to do. So we've talked about understanding your current finances. We've talked about understanding what your goals are. We've talked about setting a budget and knowing how much money you are going to be able to spend in certain areas and how much money is left over. One of the things that all or almost all new residents deal with is loans and debt. Debt from medical school, for some even debt from college. And then they come in and they have this large amount of money, and they're going to have to ultimately pay that back to the government. Now, currently, there is a hold on paying the interest of that loan, which is called forbearance, and that's really nice. That's extra money that you can use for other things. But to me, Victor, the big question, and I think the largest question for most residents, is how do I approach my loans? Should I just pay back interest only and wait till I get a big payday out of a residency? Or should I begin to put some money towards that principal in that loan as well. So what is, based on your experience and research, what have you found?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that a lot of the initial aspects for loans kind of start with first of knowing what kind of loans you have.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So most residents coming in are going to end up having federal student loans.
Okay.
So that would be like the unsubsidized or subsidized if it subsidized if it's from undergraduate,
mm-hmm.
But unsubsidized if it is then from graduate school,
mm-hmm.
And that's often then the those direct loans then come out as part of that federal loan program.
Mm-hmm.
The other option then is with private student loans, and so if somebody has private student loans, then those have not been on any kind of payment pause, and those have still been ongoing mm-hmm. for payments.
Okay, so that's important.
For most of the time, for whenever people are having these federal student loans that are currently on pause,
mm-hmm.
then the interest, just as you had said, is currently paused, and there's really haven't been payments for over like about 2 years now. So from that in mind, then I think that it's important to realize about what the goal is for those student loans and really asking that personal question
mm-hmm.
For each individual resident. Everybody's going to have a different situation. Some people might have a very, very small loan amount
mm-hmm.
where they're able to more quickly pay that off. Other
mm-hmm.
people can have, very profound and significant amount of student loans that would be very difficult to pay off in, a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
That brings up to the kind of the next point, which is really know what kind of student loan repayment plan you're in.
And so let me ask one question. These loans, the federal loans mm-hmm. that are on pause, is the interest still accruing on those loans and being added to the principal, or is it just paused entirely?
So that's actually a really good point I wanted to just kind of bring up about how that's the current pause is, which is that even though that is currently called forbearance, which under a typical forbearance, that would still be interest accruing,
mm-hmm.
because of the government forbearance, currently interest is not accruing on those loans.
So that's wonderful. That's a huge benefit to
right.
to our residents and fellows.
And so, and because of that, right now, because there's not any current interest that's accruing, that payment is essentially paused. And so there is not really much of an incentive in terms of trying to continue payments right now while those are paused. However, they are going to restart in terms
yes.
of the payments. And so I think it's really important for especially incoming residents who or even some of the second and third years who have not had to make
mm-hmm.
those payments yet, to realize that those payments are going to restart and that they need to have a plan in place in terms of their budget to be able to expect for that payment.
Yeah, that's critical, absolutely, because you never want to all of a sudden have an additional $200 or $300 payment that you weren't expecting. It also, I think, would make a lot of sense if you can to begin to pay that principal down, because ultimately then you have a smaller amount of money that then will be developing interest.
Certainly.
So, yeah.
And whether that's currently paying or just saving that money to be able to say, okay, as soon as these restart, then I've got this, pile of savings that are already there and ready to go towards that loan.
Yeah. So that's great. Yeah. I wish more people had that thought to prepare for what is coming rather than saying, this is great. I don't have to pay any interest. That's just free money that mm-hmm. I can use for something else. It won't. It's going to come.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep that
certainly.
Money maybe in savings
mm-hmm.
or
yes.
CD or something and then try to pay it off.
The other really important thing that's going on right now with the student loan pause, so there's not only then the current loan forgiveness that's
mm-hmm.
for graduate students at least who don't have any kind of the old FFEL loans, then that is, or Perkins loans, that
mm-hmm.
is more like that $10,000 that people are very aware about. That's still currently in the Supreme Court looking at whether or not that is able to be done or not. But there's also a number of different waivers that are currently available that people should be aware about. So one of those specifically is looking at the IDR or income-driven repayment waiver. Another is looking at specifically signing up for PSLF or public student loan forgiveness.
And those require you to work in certain areas, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so public service loan forgiveness specifically then is the requirements that I think it's important to talk about that because that can have a huge impact in terms of the loan amount that can potentially be forgiven and is especially relevant for residents and fellows. I'll say that's part of my student loan plan myself is looking towards public service loan forgiveness.
Got it. And even some of the loan forgiveness that's currently in the Supreme Court, if it does pass, it may predominantly focus on residents and fellows who come from low incomes, correct? And so not everybody may benefit from that.
I believe that the current information for is for those making less than $125,000.
Okay.
And so most who then are in a resident or fellow would qualify.
Oh, neat. So, that's good. That's helpful.
The other point that I would just like to make that I think is really important for current residents and fellows to keep in mind is knowing what kind of repayment plan that they're in. So there's a number of different possible repayment options that you can enroll in. Often that's something that if you're uncertain about how to find out what that is or uncertain about knowing which plan's the best for you, our financial aid department would more than certainly be glad to go through and talk about those different options. And so that's kind of one of the first, potential ways to address that. But to briefly touch on it, one of the things I want to bring up, especially for residents and fellows, is knowing about income-driven repayment plans. So that's a repayment plan that looks at the amount of money that you make and takes a proportion, which is often for the repayment plans that most would enroll in, 10% of your discretionary income. That 10% of your discretionary income then is what will calculate your loan payment to be able to see how much you'll need to repay. For a lot of the people coming out with medical student loan in that realm of $200,000 or even $300,000, the amount that you're repaying back actually is not even covering the interest that's accruing on that loan. But by being in an income-driven repayment plan, you can change what would be a standard 10-year repayment, which might be in the thousands of dollars per month, down to even a initial for whenever students are initially starting residency, that can initially be a $0 payment. Can then over the course of then that next 6 months after that be a low amount, maybe in the $60 to $100 a month range, and then more closer to somewhere in that $250 to $300 range once then they're a second and third year resident.
Got it.
Okay, that you can plan in a way, having this plan ahead, and then you'll be able to pay.
And I really like the idea of setting up a meeting with the financial resources people to really, this is what they do, right? We don't, oftentimes we're not really savvy in finances, so talking to people that are is key.
Absolutely.
So what other things haven't we touched on that you think people in residency or fellowship training should know about?
So I want to talk a little bit about public service loan forgiveness, and then specifically how to enroll in that and why that's especially relevant for residents and fellows. So public service loan forgiveness is being able to do 10 years of public service while being in an income-driven repayment plan and then being at a qualified employer. Those are the initial requirements. It's especially relevant for our residents and fellows here at UT because UT as well as university also are both of them are eligible employers to be able to count towards public service loan forgiveness.
Okay.
And your residency and fellowship time count towards that 10-year payment count.
Wow, okay. Mm-hmm.
So just in terms of that initial repayment part, you're making what is the likely most manageable payment for you on an income-driven repayment plan. And then as initially making those repayments, especially if you have a longer residency or fellowship where it you know, continues in, for me, for what will end up being at the end of it, 7 years of total time,
that
total time is still counted towards public service loan forgiveness. And so at the end of that time, that total loan amount is forgiven.
So super powerful, right? Mm-hmm. So is that, are there certain areas that you have to work within, say, in this example for UHS, UT Health, San Antonio, are there particular areas in the city that you would need to work in? Are they, do they need to be in underfunded places, or could you work anywhere in the city and get that?
So it's specifically for those that are, I guess, receiving their paycheck either through UT or University Health, because University is a 501c3 organization. So that's really the it either, but those who also work at the VA also count. So it's any kind of government or state organization or an organization that's a 501c3. And so similarly, then those that are coming out of residency or fellowship, then they can look towards, you know, okay, if they want to stay in a, in one of those 501c3 or a public institution, then they're able to then continue on towards public service loan forgiveness. But if they decide to go towards a private or any other kind of different job opportunity, there's really not any downside or any issue from them initially making that initial application and having those initial payments counted towards public service loan forgiveness. And then at that point later on, they can reassess their situation, say, is it something where I would rather, you know, try to look at private refinancing or changing my type of repayment plan to go ahead and pay off my loans.
Got it. Okay. Okay. But ultimately, if they were to go after, let's say, their 6 years or 7 years of training to another qualified employer, then they know that at the end of that 10 years, all of their loans are forgiven.
We forgive
us. Which is unbelievably powerful, especially for someone with $200,000-$300,000 in debt.
Exactly.
Yes. Oh, this is a almost like a hidden secret that people will really need to use it. Oh, thank you so much for bringing that to our us.
And certainly one other place that, especially being in San Antonio with a large military population, that's, of course, another area for repayment is people that are in military programs and, doing service there. Is there anything else, any other little tidbits before we get to your pebble, anything else that you think would be important for residents or fellows to know about?
Sure. I would just like to highlight a couple different resources of things that I use that I feel like are very helpful. One would just be as a initial budgeting software. So that can either be done, you know, it can be as simple as something like Excel. It can be as kind of electronic or as kind of self-done as I often will use the software of You Need a Budget or YNAB, which actually then can kind of do some of that zero-based budget and doing a initial assignment of money that then you know exactly where it's going. Some of the other resources that I think can also be you know, particularly helpful is there's also a lot of information that's available specifically for physicians and those in healthcare professions. One of the ones to talk about that is then a white coat investor. That's where I've initially kind of started out a lot of my journey for looking up different kind of aspects for financial well-being is through there. And similarly, they also have then different resources that you can then reach out to. It's things for whether that's looking at student loans. So I know that you have another guest who's coming on to
that's
talk a little bit more about student loans. But as part of that, there's, I think that's an initial great resource. Within that, one of the other things that we'll make sure to list within the resources is there's actually a information for goals for residents about specifically looking at things like disability insurance, talking a little bit about having a student loan plan, the importance of trying to avoid credit card debt, some of that. Yeah. Some of that information, I think, can be very helpful. And then there's also another kind of flow sheet to look at for new attendings. What's kind of the best way and best places to put those initial few dollars that you're getting that is, again, through White Coat Investors. So I think that's very helpful.
Yeah, as always, we ask our guests to leave us with a pebble and any tip. You have shared so many things with us, but a pebble that residents can use.
The thing that I would really encourage residents the most as they continue to look at their financial well-being and their financial journey is that it is exactly that. It is a journey, and it is one that takes small steps. I would encourage them just to start. If it's somebody who has looked at their finances and just thought, man, this is a lot, this is overwhelming, that's okay, and that it's okay to just start just by trying to look, sit down and look at your information and say, okay, today I'm just going to take that first step in looking over my bank account. Mm-hmm. That right there is even, you know, enough for that first step. Next week, I'm going to try to look at it of maybe just trying to do a little bit better tracking of what I'm spending money on, and taking those first steps and then going out for resources. I think that's the other thing that is really important for residents and fellows to realize that they don't have to become an expert in it, but they have to be able to know where good resources are.
Yes. Yeah. Look out for resources. Reach out to people who know, experts. Mm-hmm. Yes. What a great pebble that you have left with us. Yeah, Thank you.
I think this has been extremely helpful. And I think for the residents and fellows and even junior faculty that hear this will be quite helpful on their particular financial journey.
I also just wanted to mention as well that although I've talked about a number of different websites, applications, and resources that I personally use, that I don't have any financial stake in those organizations and don't have any financial affiliation with them.
Great. Yeah, no, I think that's great.
Yes.
Victor, this has been extremely helpful.
Ripple's Physicians Wellbeing is made possible by the Joe R. and Teresa Lozano Long School of Medicine Office for Graduate Medical Education. To contact us or learn more about the Wellness Home, visit gmewellness.utesca.edu.
This podcast is inspired by the Dalai Lama's powerful quote, "Just as ripples spread out when a single pebble is dropped into water, the actions of individuals can have far-reaching effects." We provide physicians with pebbles, tangible and actionable practices that can help make positive impacts in their personal and professional lives.